looking back, if we can embrace that part of us that's a little weird and own it, we can make a real difference, because that weirdness is our specialness. It's what makes us stand out. It could be a gift.
She's bold. She's sassy. She's a woman over 50 living a life she designed on purpose with purpose. And now here's your host of Women Over 50, a Life Redesign podcast, Shelley Dryman.
Hey, greetings, friends, and welcome back to this episode of Women Over 50, A Life Redesigned. I am Shelley, and I am so glad you have joined us today. This episode is with Isabel Morton, and it's a very touching and emotional story that Isabel shares with us. She learned that she had heart failure at a very young age, which totally came out of the blue. And she had a near-death experience, which I thought was just really fascinating, the story that she shares with us, and also how this journey has just transformed her life. She's just a lovely, beautiful soul, and I think that you will really like this interview with Isabel. And she also talks about the generosity of the organ donor that saved her life. And down in the show notes, you'll be able to find out all the information of Isabel and how you too can be an organ donor. But before we get started on this episode with Isabel, I just want to let you know that we have a new group off of Facebook. If you are looking for a more focused, intentional, take action, purposeful community for women over 50, you need to join us. Women Over 50, alifredesigned.com. I'll put that down in the show notes. All right, folks, on to our episode with Isabel. Isabel, I would love to hear your story about your heart failure and the near-death experience.
All right, so let's start with the heart failure.
Yeah.
It was in 2002, October. My boyfriend, who is now my husband, we went to visit my mom in New Jersey, which does end up having some significance because that's where my donor actually came from, New Jersey. We were sitting on the couch watching the World Series, and all of a sudden, out of the blue, it felt like my insides were shaking, like a salt shaker, like I had just drunk 5 gallons of espresso. It was bad. I could not sit down. My whole body was shaking. And this went on for 2 hours. I tried everything to calm down. I tried my favorite mantra, which is the Hue, which is so powerful for me. I tried Lama's childbirth techniques. I tried Tai Chi, yoga, everything you can think of, and nothing worked. I ended up passing out. Ambulance came, took me to the hospital. I ended up in a special cardiac unit where I was told that I not only needed a internal cardiac defibrillator in case this happened again, but what I had experienced was a life-threatening heart failure. It was called ventricular tachycardia, and that I needed to get on the heart transplant list.
Okay, so
yeah,
I'm going to interrupt you here for a second. did you know that you had this issue?
No.
Oh, good.
We were shocked. We were absolutely shocked.
I would have been like, what the hell? What do you mean?
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I'm sorry, but that is just blowing my mind at the moment. Okay.
And it blew my mind. We wanted to hear this from another doctor because it was too much.
Well, and that's really a serious thing. I mean, definitely something that I don't know. I'd be like, yeah, second opinion here. So, okay. So you're in the hospital and they tell you that you need a new heart and all that.
We didn't know what to say, except we need to hear this from somebody else because it was from a doctor we had never seen before.
Yeah.
And we almost felt indignant. Like, what right do you have to come in here to a patient you've never even met and tell them they need a new heart? I could no longer take care of my children. I could no longer work. I could no longer barely take care of myself. My boyfriend and I were not quite at the readiness to move in together, but we were forced to. I had to move in with him because I could not take care of myself. So we made the drive back to Connecticut and I moved in with him. And my mom was taking care of my youngest at the time, who was around 3 years old.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah, my second youngest was 5, and she was staying with her dad. I do have 3 older children from a previous marriage, and they were with him on the West Coast.
Mm-hmm.
So my life just completely turned upside down. Absolutely.
What triggered this episode? I mean, was it a virus or just that you just started shaking and then went into heart failure? What?
Yeah, well, that's the mystery because they didn't know.
Okay.
I went through all kinds of tests. Everything from, is this some strange virus from South America to, I mean, it very likely was congenital. And they didn't have a clue until it was the following year. It was January 22nd, 2004, that they did an open heart surgery. They had to fix one of my valves because my blood was actually flowing backward through the heart whenever I exercised, which is why I could hardly even move.
Uh-huh.
So they fixed that, and they found that the scarring in my heart was pervasive, leading them to the conclusion that I had had this all my life, and it had just gotten worse and worse and worse to the point where it couldn't take it anymore, and then the heart just failed.
Okay. So, wow. I'm still trying to wrap my mind around.
Yeah, well, it took us a while to wrap our minds around it, too.
Oh, I bet.
Just so sudden.
So how old were you when this happened?
I was 40. Let's see, I must have been 42 or 41. And then I turned 42 on actually January 22nd. And then I got the heart in 2005 when I was 44.
Yeah, so tell us that journey. The heart transplant, the donor, you know, just anything that you would like to tell us about that experience and how that changed your life, basically.
Yeah. Well, if I just cut to the chase here, I had been in the hospital for 70 days.
Yeah.
And for the prior, I think, 18 of them, my boyfriend had been sick. He had a cold. And so he could not visit me. Uh-huh. Which was unusual because he had been with me since the time that my heart failed in October 2002 through the surgery in 2003, through the whole 9 yards. He was with me every moment he was there. He was not for those 2 weeks. The day he came back to the hospital, and the reason he had to stay away was because if I got his cold, they would have to take me off the transplant list.
Oh.
Because you have to be perfectly healthy.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, that makes sense.
So I was in a reverse quarantine. Everybody who came into my room, even to deliver food, had to be draped in a mask and in a, you know, like one of those drape things.
Mat suits. Whatever.
Yeah. Just about.
Wow.
So that night he comes in, we have all kinds of hors d'oeuvres and we're kind of celebrating because we haven't seen each other in so long. And we had a cot put next to the bed for him to spend the night. 2:00 in the morning, the lights come on. These two doctors stand at the foot of my bed and I'm groggy and he's groggy. I'm like, what? Who turned on the lights? What's going on? I had practiced a gratitude prayer. I had been preparing for this moment ever since I knew I was going to get a heart.
Uh-huh.
And I had memorized this prayer that when I heard the news that I would give gratitude to God, I would give gratitude to my donor, I would give gratitude to the doctors and everyone involved. But when one of those doctors said, Miss Navarre, which is my maiden name, I think we have a heart for you. All I could say was, wow. And I just kept saying, wow. I had only waited maybe 3 weeks. I should count how many days exactly, but it had only been since the beginning of January where I was even healthy enough to get on the list.
Yeah.
That itself was remarkable. And it's probably because I had a relatively rare blood type. I'm an AB positive. Mm-hmm. So only 4% of the people have that.
Yeah.
Even in the Boston area region where they usually match recipients to donors, There were none. So this heart came from outside the district. It came from New Jersey. It was a car accident victim, and you usually don't know that. Usually don't get to hear those details, but we were blessed, really blessed, to find that out. What happens, and this is phenomenal, what happens is that when there is a potential heart or any organ, there is a team that goes from my hospital, which was in Boston. They fly to New Jersey. They're there while the body is prepped, while there are tests that are done to ensure that we are going to be a good match. The permission has already been granted by the family for this. The heart is harvested. It's put in a cooler, a lunch cooler.
Oh.
Yeah. And then we have 4 hours to get into my body. They literally race to do that by ambulance, by helicopter. Even air traffic control stops all other flights to get the heart where it needs to be. It's just so amazing how this organization, this nationwide organization, is set up to allow life to continue by organ donation. I didn't think I'd get emotional, but...
Oh, that's okay. I interview a lot of women. We all get emotional, so it's okay.
I wouldn't be here. I have 5 kids.
Yeah.
You know, who would have lost a mom?
Yeah, and your kids were young. So you get your heart. I just think that's an amazing story in and of itself, how, you know, I'm an organ donor, and I've known, I had my son, when he was 14, his best friend had to have a heart transplant. So I know a little bit about it. But just the generosity of the people, allowing other people to live and benefit from their tragedy or whatever. So I think it's amazing. I think it's amazing. And I did, you know, I don't really know the ins and outs of it, but thank goodness that you did get your heart and you got the transplant and you're obviously doing well.
Yes.
After so many years. And you talk about your gemstone therapy. Now, did you practice this before your heart transplant, or is this something that came after your illness?
I had started working with it in 1987 and 1988.
Okay.
And I published a book in 1988.
Okay.
Called Gifts of the Gemstone Guardians. Had been in the jewelry industry with my first husband, so it was natural that we moved into gemstones and their healing properties. I'm a mainstream girl. I don't like coloring outside the lines. And what we had been learning back then was just stretching me beyond my capacity. I feared ostracism. I feared criticism, especially from my friends, my church, my family. I did not want to be labeled weird or a lunatic or crazy. And so this was just too outside what I felt was comfortable. And I had to leave. Mm-hmm. I had to leave it. I had to leave it behind. And that ended up in a divorce. What brought me back to the work and the recognition of how much I love this work was almost losing my life and the near-death experience that I had had prior to the transplant when I was waiting in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
It was a matter of, well, despite everything else, just what I had to go through. I only told you a piece of it.
If you want to tell us more, feel free.
There was so much the doctors tried to do to save my life. I mean, I had the surgery. They wrote me up for heart transplant evaluation even before that first surgery. There's 3 days you have to be in the hospital getting every test they can possibly think of. Psychological, every organ of your body needs to be tested to see if you're healthy enough for a heart transplant. And I know that sounds a little bit odd, but they want you to survive. Somebody is giving their heart, their loved one's organ to you to live, for you to have life. And so the best candidates are those who are otherwise perfectly healthy. They just have one problem, which is the heart. And that was me. I was perfectly healthy except for my heart. And so they thought that, well, let's try to fix the heart first. And so they did. And I got another 8 to 10 months of being in really good health. I was able to go to cardiac rehab. exercise. So I did have more time. When my heart failed the next time, I was at home, and that was when the internal cardiac defibrillator went off. It went off 29 times, and it's a jolt. It's like, they tell you it's like a horse kicking you. What they don't say is it's a horse kicking you from the front and the back and both sides at the same time. It's a real kick from the inside. And after, 12 times when it didn't get my heart to beat properly, it goes to the next level and it goes stronger. I'm in the ambulance and this thing is still firing. I get to the hospital. They were able to give me a drug that was able to calm the heart down. It did. And they thought, okay, well, she's calm now. Let's send her home. So they started weaning me of this IV medicine and started replacing it with an oral version, which did not work. My father had flown in from Texas to be there for me while I was in the hospital when I had first gone in. This was in 2004. This was November 2004. So I'd had the first surgery in January of 2003. The heart had failed in 2002, just to get the timeline. And I knew that I was not going to come out of the hospital without a new heart. I just knew. So anyway, I'm in the ICU. They're weaning me from this drug. My father's there. Bob's there. We're just sitting around. We're just chatting. And then all of a sudden that shaky feeling comes again. And I say, uh-oh, here we go again. And so I get up. I'm heading for the bed because I know what's going to happen. Nurses rush into the room because they see the monitor in the other room. Yeah. I know that I'm doing the ventricular tachycardia again. So I go to bed and I lay down and I'm just waiting. Boom, this thing happens and they're all around me doing what they do, busy, busy, busy. And it fired 5 times. Now, I don't want to scare anybody who has the ICD because, it hurts. But you know what? It saves your life.
Yeah.
So that was 29 plus 5 times. That was 34 times. 34 times I could have died if I didn't have that ICD. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like going to the dentist. You hate going to the dentist. It hurts. But when you're done, you're glad you went.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, So in this bed, they're doing whatever they're doing. This thing's fired 5 times. So much pain. And it was as simple as just closing your eyes and then opening them. And the next thing I knew was that instead of the nurses surrounding me, there were these angels, there were these spiritual masters that were surrounding me. And each one had something special to say to me about my life. And then off in the distance was this curtain of blue. And there was a spiritual master that I had, that I follow, was there. And I knew I was to go through this curtain of blue. And I do. And wouldn't you know, I'm in line. I'm in line. And I'm thinking, okay, this is where you meet the angel of death. And God knows what's going to happen. Am I going to go to heaven? Am I going to go to hell? You wonder these things. Uh-huh. So I'm in line. It was a short line. And when I go up to this great being, the love was just, oh my God, just filled me with love. And it was an assignment. I was given an assignment of what I was to do now that I was in heaven. And I love reading. I love libraries. I love research. My job was to travel to higher levels of heaven, visit libraries there, gain knowledge, and then bring it back to this kind of lower level of heaven and transcribe it. And I had this table in this library. You might call it the astral plane, if you've heard about that. It's just mm-hmm. one of the levels of heaven. Mm-hmm. And this big white book, and my handwriting was beautiful, which was in itself a miracle because my handwriting is hardly legible, even to myself. And I'm writing this information, and it's just this wonderful thing. And then I go back and forth. I have no idea. I can't tell you if it was months or years that I was doing this work, but it was so much fun. And then one day, I get a tap on my shoulder saying, it's time for you to reincarnate. And I'm like, no, I don't want to do that. I don't want to reincarnate. I'm having too much fun. Aren't I serving? Aren't I giving? Doing my job? Aren't I doing it so well? I was brought to these two other, you might say, angels or spiritual masters, and you have more to learn about love. I'm still trying to state my case here. I can learn that in heaven. I can learn about love in heaven. And this other master was rummaging through this big basket of, looked like clothing. And what was happening was that he was trying to find karma that I could wear that could put me in a place back on earth where I could fit, a reason for me to come back. And it just wasn't, nothing was fitting. It's like you go to your closet and you've got nothing to wear. So then the other master said, well, maybe we could just do a little tweak on the time track and put her back to where she was when she left, and she could finish out her life there. And that seemed to be an agreeable idea. And the next thing I know, the lights are on. Whoever was doing resuscitation on my heart stopped. The pain came back. They gave me morphine for that. And here I am. Meanwhile, my to-be husband and my father were in the other room. They were watching my monitor, and I had flatlined, and someone left the room saying, we lost her. I'm also here because of those dedicated nurses who kept trying. They kept trying, and I don't know how long they kept trying, but they did. They kept trying, and I don't know, again, how long I was gone. It seemed like a long time to me, but there I was. There I was.
So how has that... I've never experienced anything like that. I can't even, I passed out in the bathroom once. I mean, that's like the only thing, I was really sick and I passed out. That's the only thing I can relate. I mean, I can't even fathom. So how has that changed your life? I mean, it's got to have changed your life dramatically. Mm-hmm. Have, you know, not only a new heart, but also that near death or death experience, however you want to call that.
A lot of ways.
Yeah.
I mean, from the very mundane feeling so grateful for life, not taking for granted things. 15 years out, I find myself slipping into that. And sometimes it takes just a little wake up call. Whoa, I'm still here.
Is that really a remember? Big deal?
Yeah. I mean, I think there's this big problem, and then, whoa, wait a second. Let's put this in. With some perspective here, but it was also, I came back with a sense of who cares if people think I'm weird? It took a while, even from then, it took a while to really own that. I had written some books after I left the gemstone world in the 80s. I had written books on liquid nutritional supplements, and that those royalties carried me through the transplant. And then in 2005, I had the transplant. My royalties started dwindling, and I think, oh my gosh, I have to find more work. What I actually did was I called my ex-husband and I said, is there anything I can do for you? It felt like there was still an unpaid debt. There was something not finished, and I really felt that. I had to do more work for him to finish our contract, and he was very open to that. And so I did more research for him on the gemstones. And here was the difference. You know, I still have a hard time talking about it. In the past, I had done channeling. Not a fan of channeling. It was too woo-woo for me. I just couldn't deal with that. But now that I had this near-death experience, I knew I didn't have to. If I was to do research on healing properties of gemstones, I had this ability to just go out of my body, so to speak, and, well, not so to speak, in reality, go back to this library where I had done all this research and just look up a book on these gemstones and just kind of transcribe. It was as if I was taking the work that I had done while I was between lives and bringing it from that level of heaven and now bringing it into the physical. And so perhaps my assignment is still ongoing, but I still felt I was weird. I did not want anybody to know I was doing this. Uh-huh. I could not even admit it to my children. And then one day I was with my two youngest ones and we were making cookies and I said to them, do you know your mom's weird? And they said, yeah, pass the sugar. And I said, no, your mom is really weird. I mean, I am weird. They were like, Mom, get over it. We're all weird. Everybody's weird. And this is from what she was 10 at the time.
Yeah.
We're all a little bit weird. And I think looking back, if we can embrace that part of us that's a little weird and own it, we can make a real difference because that weirdness is our specialness. It's what makes us stand out. It could be a gift. Even the tragedies that some people have had that can make you feel outcast and different and less than. Do you know how many other people are really needing someone like you to hear that story, to give them the strength? How many people are worse off than you?
Yeah, when you were talking, I actually wrote down, own your weird. So yeah, I certainly resonate with that. What a fascinating story. Oh my goodness. I am just so glad that you let me hear that you trusted me enough to tell me that story. It's so fascinating. I'm not going to have words for quite a while on this, but is there anything else you want to tell the listeners about anything, whether it's your transplant or your gemstone therapy or your life today or advice or anything that you'd like to relay to our listeners?
I would like to invite all of you to deeply consider getting on the donor registry. Uh-huh. It doesn't matter how old you are. One of the oldest donors in the United States was 92. Oh. And he gave a liver to save the life of a 69-year-old woman. There is no age limit. If you are willing to give of your organs when you're done with them, you will save the life of 7 to 8 people.
Oh, wow.
You can improve the life of 75 people with tissue donation. And the thing is also, it's hard for society to justify a 70-year-old who's healthy getting the organ of a 25-year-old. Society has a hard time wrapping their head around that. But why not get the organ of a 60-year-old or a 50-year-old, or in this case, a 92-year-old.
Yeah.
It's just such a wonderful thing. What a wonderful gift. And I can tell you from firsthand experience that I did not think once about that body I left behind. Not once.
Yeah.
My attention was on for a short time. I witnessed my memorial service. I saw how my loved ones were dealing with my passing, and I just gave them so much love. I was able to do that to help them heal. And then when I felt they could no longer receive any more from me, I was off doing my own thing.
Yeah.
When I was in 2016, I had a pretty major rejection. I was in the hospital for 5 weeks. And at Hartford Hospital, they have a flag. It's a green flag that is risen when there's a heart transplant. And there's a big announcement throughout the hospital. And I said to Bob, who was at that time my husband, he finally married me. I said, please go down in on my behalf. Please go to this ceremony. And he was so glad he did, because when he was down there, he introduced himself as the husband of a woman who had had a transplant. And so the coordinator of this flag raising ceremony had him connect with the family. It turns out it was the mother who had passed, leaving two young adult children and a husband behind. And she knew all her life that she was meant to be an organ donor.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
She had even written a poem for the person who was going to receive her heart. And that poem was read at the flag raising ceremony. Everyone was in tears.
Oh my goodness.
The family of the organ donor, the mom, We're so grateful to hear the other side of the story, what the life might be like for the person who received the heart, because you don't know.
Yeah.
They keep that information very private.
Yeah.
You have to reach out and ask permission to get connected. I've not heard from my donor family, and that's okay. My donor was 26. Most people don't know how old their donors were. Yeah, and knowing that my donor died in a car accident was very helpful to me, because for a while after my transplant, I couldn't drive. I was so afraid to get behind the wheel of a car. It was terror. It was absolute terror. I could not do it. And so I had a therapist who was also a yoga practitioner. She sat with me in the passenger seat, and we would drive around the block. And whenever the panic came up, she just put her hand behind my back and help me through it.
Uh-huh.
And that was when I started getting images of the accident. I started getting images of the glass and the impact. And more importantly, my heart, the terror that my heart felt being alive in a dead body.
Yeah.
And so my healing journey became not just my healing journey, but the healing journey of this new heart.
Yeah.
Was going to become a more conscious friend of mine, more of a companion.
Oh yeah, I totally believe that. Totally believe that. So you're driving today. Your heart's good. I mean, mm-hmm. are you healthy? Things are good. And I can attest to the donor. Like I said earlier, when my son was 14, his best friend got a virus which attacked his heart, and within months he was on the donor list. He was a very sick little 14-year-old boy. And I just remember the pain his mother was going through, and when they didn't think he was going to get a heart. And then a donor came through. So from that point on, I thought, I don't need this heart. I don't need this liver. I don't, when I'm gone, I'm not going to need these things. Wherever I may be, they're not going to be of any use to me. So I'm a big advocate of donation. And that's one of the reasons I really wanted to have you on my podcast to talk about that too. Well, Isabel, our time is up. Thank you so, so much. I just love your story. And it's just I'm just going to carry it with me for a long time. It's going to be something I think about for a long time.
I would like to gift your listeners, if that's okay with you, with
absolutely
my book. And it's called Accepting Destiny. Heart transplant and near-death experience gave me the courage to share gemstone therapy with the world.
I believe it's on your press kit here, the
yes.
digital copy of your book. Okay, I'll make sure I share that link and how to get in touch with you and all that stuff. So thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Really appreciate it.
Thank you for joining Shelley today on Women Over 50, a Life Redesign podcast. Be sure to join the ever-growing community of like-minded women on Facebook. That's the Women Over 50, a Life Redesigned Facebook group. Join today.